You're listening to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
It's a miracle, gentlemen. I got bars again.
Bars?
I can make phone calls.
I thought you were going to start spitting rhymes.
Come on, guys.
Spit those lyrics.
You guys
I
know
got
me
bars,
for,
too.
You guys have known me for 3 years. Like, really?
You're not exactly the most sheltered guy. You're willing to do a lot of things for entertainment, Reach. That's... Rapping is not beyond you. It'll happen one day, I'm sure of it.
I'll do the cringy password intro again before I start rapping at all.
Ah, yes, about that.
Ah, yes. Password 2.0 debuting today. It's good that the phones are back up. We might need you getting your fingers dialing coming up after 6 o'clock as we unveil an evolution to password here on the People's Show. I'm excited for it. I think even Sat's on board for it, so we know it's got to be pretty good.
Fully on board. Super excited. And it's password 2.0. So you password fans, you get to still have password. You can still have your rankings. You're still going to be able to call in and text in. And it's just going to be streamlined and far more user-friendly. It's like we have upgraded to, you know, the new version.
I know it's early, but we're actually, you know, we were talking about communication gaps early on in the show. We have none. We're all on the same page on this. I'm surprised. It's too good to be true, really, if you think about it.
Finally, I feel like Paul Rudd. Look at us, huh? Who would have thought?
We're not there yet. We're not there yet. Let's get it done first. You never know, man.
That's true.
The People Show is presented by Grip Auto and Tire, quality service you can trust in 14 locations to serve you. Now joining us, Grant Wall, Football with Grant Wall podcast. You can check it out on your favorite podcatchers. Thanks for this, Grant. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're great. Thanks for making time for us today. It's, this story is like, it's wild, changing every second, it seems. I see Real Madrid president Florentino Perez just spoke, and his quotes are flying around on Twitter right now. The European Super League has just captivated everybody. What's your initial take on everything that's happened over the last 24 hours?
It's a bad idea. And it's going to drastically impact European soccer in ways that I don't think are for the better. I think they could have addressed the issues that they're talking about wanting to address in a way that was better for the overall collective of soccer clubs in Europe and soccer fans in Europe and for the domestic leagues. Because, you know, what this does is essentially, you know, we see this in society, right? The inequality keeps growing and growing and growing. And that's exactly what's been happening in European soccer over the last 20 years. And basically now the richest clubs want to ensure that they, through no achievement of their own, you know, they're going to be in, you know, these top 12 clubs, 15 if they get the three additional clubs they want, will never be relegated from this Super League, and they'd have guaranteed revenues that they would manage, not UEFA. And it becomes a giant money grab.
You know, it is all about the money, and I wonder how much of this is being expedited by a lot of billionaires being desperate in a pandemic as well, looking at their margins, saying, we got to do what we can to up our revenue. But at the same time, these conversations about a European Super League have been around for a very long time, well over a decade. The thing is, has that desperation finally got to the point where they're going to force this through? And, you know, like, as much as, like, I'm still not believing it'll happen, but am I being naive here that this is more likely to happen than not at this stage?
It's a great question, because you can go back to the late 60s when people were starting to propose a European Super League in soccer. So this is not a new idea at all. We've seen more pressure being put on by the big clubs over the last 20 years, last 10 years. But every time they've done it in the past, they've been using it as a negotiating tactic to get some sort of concessions in their favor, but not blowing up the system of Champions League. And part of me still wonders if that's a possibility here, Because even Florentino Perez, the Real Madrid president tonight, is saying he wants to sit down at the table and talk to UEFA. So I'm pretty curious about what it is they're actually seeking. And, you know, like what had been expected until this past weekend, until Sunday, was that they were going to agree, the clubs and UEFA, on a new setup for Champions League starting in 2024. And Perez is saying tonight, well, that wasn't enough revenue for the big clubs under that system. And he indicated that maybe they could negotiate changing things sooner than 2024, but maybe keep the Champions League as it is. There's so much that remains to be determined here. But what we do know is that UEFA is fighting back. They're seeing this as basically an effort to nuke UEFA. And that's why the UEFA president is issuing threats, saying that players that participate in this Super League will not be allowed to compete in the European Championship or even the World Cup.
This is a bit of a game of brinksmanship because, as you mentioned, you know, UEFA has their cards that they can play and say, hey, you're banned from our tournaments, and FIFA can play that game as well. But the biggest and the most richest clubs are a part of this 12. And, you know, I'm an Arsenal guy. Sat's a Chelsea guy. You know, there's a lot of folks that are Tottenham fans. With all due respect to Arsenal and Tottenham, they haven't been a very good a couple of clubs over the last couple of years. But financially, they are up there. They've got a lot of cash reserves. Mm. So, you know, the game of brinksmanship, how far can this go? Because, Grant, as we mentioned, the major tournaments are held by those organizations, but these are the biggest players in the game.
Right. And I think it's also interesting, UEFA is issuing the biggest threats against this Super League, but FIFA is not issuing those threats right now. And part of me is wondering if FIFA, when it comes down to it behind closed doors, isn't that bothered by this, that maybe somehow this serves FIFA's interests in a way that it hurts UEFA. Because you have to remember, what FIFA has been doing is they've been trying to organize this new expanded FIFA Club World Cup that would take place every 2 years or every 4 years and have 24 teams or 32. And I could see FIFA in the end maybe even going along with this annual, you know, European Super League if it meant that they could go ahead and do their once every 2 years or 4 years FIFA Club World Cup. So there's a lot of different interests here right now. And I should say, it's not like FIFA and UEFA are the good guys. There's kind of no good guys in this one. And that's worth reiterating. But it does seem like fans are the ones that are going to take the negative end of this.
It's Grant Wall joining us here on The People Show. And it does feel like these clubs all look at themselves and are like, hey, we're the greatest things since sliced bread. And, you know, we're the biggest global sports brands on the planet. And it almost feels like they want to make this kind of like a global sports league. You know, that maybe that's the eventual evolution of it. And maybe that's the tie-in with FIFA that you kind of mentioned. But I can see this European Super League final being played in at MetLife Stadium or somewhere in China. You know, like, and they just kind of parade it around every single year because, you know, these teams are outgrowing their local fan bases. They're world teams now.
Well, the point of it is hyper capitalism, to maximize as much as possible revenues, but to do it in a cartel type system where there's much less jeopardy, much less risk, and all 12 of these teams that announced in the last 24 hours know that they would get this revenue year after year after year and not have to worry about that, because right now they do have to worry. Juventus right now is in real danger of not qualifying for Champions League next year. Same, obviously, with Tottenham and Arsenal. They would not qualify for Champions League next year. So, that type of, it's like an American sports league, right? What we're sort of used to, but 100 years or more of European sports has built something that is not that. And so you know, I think a lot of this too is negativity coming today, probably appropriately, toward the American influence on all this. So, you know, there's several American owners that have been the ones pushing for this, you know, owners of Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Milan, and then some other ones like the Juventus owner and Real Madrid that are clearly going along with this. But this is traditional American sports business concepts, and it's being bankrolled by J.P. Morgan, an American bank. And so I can understand some of the anti-American stuff coming out of Europe today, too. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's because, you know, fans look at that, and because we look at the sports leagues here, and we kind of longingly look at the European model and say, gee, wouldn't it be great if you had relegation and you had the relegation battles and the mid-table battles and all that sort of stuff and other competitions. So I get it, like maybe there isn't the perfect system here, but the cynic in me here sees them looking at this and saying, this is step one. Eventually we'll have our 30 clubs, mm-hmm. then we'll have a salary cap, then we'll have a salary limit on the players, then we'll do this. Like, it just seems like the first step to creating the exact same system the NFL essentially has.
Yeah, because they've, I mean, the Super League people even said in their official release that they plan to have a salary cap, which is something we haven't seen in European soccer. We've seen financial fair play, which isn't quite the same thing. And so I want to know what the superstar players and their agents think about this, the fact that there's going to be a salary cap in European soccer, at least in this Super League. And, you know, what does Lionel Messi think, or Cristiano Ronaldo, or Kylian Mbappe, because, or their agents? You know, players' unions in soccer in Europe have never been as strong as the players' unions in the big North American professional leagues. And I'm wondering if this move might cause that to happen, or instead of that, if it just means that super agents like George Mendes and Mino Raiola gain even more power because of the players they represent. But I'm still curious to see how they exercise that, because the players need to buy into this Super League idea as well.
Grant, there's a financial, you know, component of this that we've talked a lot about, but with soccer, with football, there's always that connection with the fan base. Liverpool, you'll never walk alone. Barcelona, more than a club. For those two clubs especially, but I think this goes for a lot of those 12 clubs, it feels like that next layer of fandom, that tribal aspect of it, where you have that love for the club and what it represents, but you also understand that there's a risk in supporting these clubs, that one day they could tumble. That's a part of the experience. How do you think the fan experience would change with this change when it comes to, you know, the Super League? Because it feels like there are some fans out there threatening and saying, it's not going to be the same again if you do this.
I guess my question, and I literally don't know the answer to this, is will this Super League turn off fans to the point where they don't watch? And if I have to take a guess on that, I would say they might grumble, but I don't know if they'll not watch. And so that's clearly the risk and the decision that these clubs are taking by announcing that they want to be part of this Super League, is they think it will grow fan bases, particularly internationally, but that they won't lose their domestic-based fans because of it. And I can't answer that, you know, exactly what will happen, but I could certainly see this being successful from a purely business, you know, money perspective. But, you know, like for decades, for a century, we've been taught that soccer clubs, especially in Europe, are not just about the money. Like you said, that they're about the community and all of those other things and the collective and supporting the pyramid. And, you know, like when it's just a pure money thing like this is, it's hard to not be cynical about that.
Yeah, it's not the greatest look right now. And on top of that, using COVID as part of their reasoning is pretty distasteful, to say the least. He is Grant Wall. Check out the football podcast with Grant Wall, and also the great series American Prodigy, the Freddie Adu story as well, available on your favorite podcatchers. Grant, really appreciate your time today. Thank you for this.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
There is Grant Wall. Joining us here on The People's Show. And yeah, it's there's a lot that's distasteful about this. And, you know, it does kind of feel like when a league goes on strike. You know, when the NHL went through their lockout in 0405 and the Stanley Cup was not awarded. Major League Baseball, they did it in 94. Remember the Expos, and the Expos never recovered from that when they had, you know, one of the greatest teams that baseball had ever seen all just go along the wayside. But eventually fans came back, you know, but that's where the business of it, it's kind of the thing that we try not to think about too much because we love the sports, we love the entertainment aspect of this so much.
Yeah, and it's something we're so familiar to as well. But there are here's the thing, right? I mean, I kind of understand why in North America they have the closed sports league models because, hey, it's one continent, right? Two countries, essentially, Canada and the U.S., mostly the U.S., especially for any league that's not the National Hockey League, that it's really hard to have, say, 40, 50 clubs that are in different tiers that can go up and down, and you have the infrastructures built out. Like, from hockey standpoint, the reason they had to grow the game into the non-traditional hockey markets was because they needed more people playing hockey at a young age. They need to grow the fan base. Soccer already has that growth. So why would you cut your nose to spite your face, essentially, just to get some more money up front? Like, what you want is what soccer has already achieved, having everybody playing it in every corner of the world, especially in every single European country. And you're essentially going to cut that off at the knees to make it an exclusive club. It really flies in the face of what's really good, truly, for the game. And as much as it helps your bottom line now, long term, it might end up hurting you more than it's helping you.
Yeah, and I think those biggest brands that we talk of, those 12 clubs, they are the most successful brands in sports. They're the most successful brands in soccer. And there's a reason that they're starting this. But at the same time, is it good for the game? And looking at this, you know, some of the great stories over the last number of years, Aston Villa winning the European Cup back in the day, Nottingham Forest, and then most recently in 2004, you know, FC Porto winning the Champions League. Like, those were teams that came out of nowhere. With this model, that's going to be almost impossible. And those Cinderellas, those small clubs in this system, A, probably won't even be part of it because it's, you know, cost certainty, it's revenue certainty, where these big clubs are going to be making the most money. But really, from my experience and as a soccer fan, the reason I fell in love with soccer was that it was the people's game, right? You go to a small club, they absolutely love their team and they're loyal to the core. The ups and downs, when you sign up as a soccer fan, there's a social contract that you say, up or down, I'm with this team. And generally, there will be some ups every now and then. There's probably more downs. And this kind of goes against that. The North American model in soccer, I would still watch my team to a certain degree. But yeah, I would fall off a little bit. Would I be as interested in certain elements? Probably not, because it makes it artificial. And we've started to see that over the last two decades in the English Premier League, especially. They're kind of that monster that grew to that next level where commercialism really changed the game day experience. You saw foreign owners kind of come into it. But I don't think this is a good step for the game. I think this is going to hurt the game more than anything. It's good for business, not necessarily good for the game.
Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham aren't even Champions League squads right now. They've been passed by Leicester City and West Ham. That's from Mike on the Dunbar Lumber Texas.
Chelsea's played one less game. They play tomorrow. They get one point or they win. They'll be back in the top four. So relax, Mike. I get it. It's facts only, but relax. No. But I understand the overall point. Like I get it. And like the EPL is already super competitive as it is.
But it's the only one. It's the only one.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's the only one, but it's a fantastic one. So why should they hurt their model to help the other leagues because they don't have a competitive model? And it's not the only one. Let's be honest, too. I mean, look at what's happened in Spain the last little while. Like, we've seen Atletico. I know they've kind of fallen off after, you know, being really good earlier this year. But we've seen other clubs in Spain all of a sudden wrestle away that dominance from Barcelona and Real. It's really just PSG and Juventus. And maybe Bayern to some degree, but even Bayern to some degree, the Bundesliga, there is some back and forth with Dortmund. We saw Frankfurt a couple of years ago.
Bayern's won eight in a row, though. Like,
I guess Juventus is a stranglehold.
Yeah,
guys, but like Juve's, you know, they were focused as the Champions League this year, but they're fourth in their league. Come on, Inter Milan's back on top. So this whole idea that it's a cakewalk for Juventus, they had priorities elsewhere. They want to make more revenue throughout Europe, but the fact of the matter is, they're still number four in the Italian league, right? So my point is, yeah, you're looking at, okay, how do the best teams create the most revenue, to get the most out of it? And they're going to get like 600 million pounds or euros a year out of this. This is revenue certainty. But for an average fan, if you are a Bologna fan in Serie A, if you're a Sampdoria fan, Sassuolo, this sucks because you are never, ever going to get a chance to play at the highest level. The chances that you had before are cut in half, if not down to like 10%. You're done. So that's not good for the sport. That's good for Juventus. That's good for Inter. That's good for AC Milan. It's not good for the Italian sport.
It's, I think that's a little bit overstated. It's happened in the Prem, but we don't see it so much in other leagues where teams jump up to the higher spots of the table or anything like that. Now, okay, so if we love the pro rel system so much, why wouldn't it work in the NHL? Where you have a pyramid scheme with the NHL, AHL, and ECHL. Igor Larionov, the great former Canuck, brought this up on Twitter yesterday, and it kind of blew up a little bit. But why wouldn't we want to see this in North American sports then, if we love this pro rel system so much?
There's a simple answer to that. It's about starting point. Mm-hmm. What is your starting point? And in the NHL, in pro sports in North America, it's guaranteed revenue. No owner in their right mind is going to say, we're going to go from the safe system where I basically get money and I have a guaranteed success and I'm going to go into a pro relegation, promotion relegation. Because all of a sudden, if you get relegated, you're losing millions. This is a cash game. No owner. If tomorrow Gary Bettman made that rule, he would be fired within minutes, because he'd be giving up revenue for some of the owners. So it's about starting point. In North America, it was never a starting point. In Europe, they started with the better system. They started for the better system for fans, not for business people, but for fans. So, Reach, the reason it's not going to happen in North America is
Randy,
business people
all the
understand.
Reasons you talk no. about that you love, you know, the parity of the NHL and you like the draft system and all these things like that. That's exactly what, you know, these European clubs are kind of going for now.
Yeah, but when you just cut off like a good chunk of the clubs in the entire continent, how is that better? How is that actually giving teams a chance to play? The problem in Europe is that the haves and the have-not system from all that basically, you know, no salary cap, no nothing, it created brands that were bigger than the actual sport. And those turned into monsters, and those monsters are now wreaking havoc on the smaller clubs. That's what's happening here.
You don't have enough teams. You don't have enough teams with robust fan bases. At least you have in the championship, for instance, you have clubs that have been around forever that have robust fan bases that once they get promoted, there's a big fan base that shows up to every game. At least their games all get sold out. I know right now in the pandemic, of course, it's different. But during a regular campaign, championship sides have their entire game sold out. That doesn't really happen in AHL, and the fandom there is a lot different. You just don't have the establishment as big as it is. So you already have all these clubs that have a legacy, have dedicated fans, have the infrastructure put in place to be part of a league like that. You simply don't have enough of that in North America. And the starting point was so much later in terms of building these teams and, you know, the continent being a lot younger than what Europe's at. They just don't have enough clubs like they do in European soccer to have that type of system. That's the truth of it.
My biggest issue with the North American sports model is rewarding poor play. to put it lightly, you know, I very much dislike the fact that you reward teams for finishing in last place. And it's created a culture of tanking. Look, there's pros and cons to both systems, but if there was a way that you could reduce the tanking aspect that we've created in the North American sports landscape, that would be something that I am all for to borrow from, you know, the European aspect, where you have to fight for every point, no matter where you are in the table. You know, if it's you want to get into the Champions League, you've got to finish in the top four spots. You want to get into the Europa League, you got to finish here. You want to avoid relegation, you've got to get this many points. You know, and that's the accountability aspect is something that there's not enough of in North American sport. And you see it in the NHL, and it manifested itself with the Edmonton Oilers, the New Jersey Devils, the Buffalo Sabres now as well, where just these teams just continuously lose and they never get out of that cycle.
But here's the issue. In the North American game, the league has the authority. In the European soccer game, the clubs have the clout. The clubs can dictate whatever they want now. They've got to a point where they're essentially launching their own league. Authority is needed. You know, the teams can't be running the show. And when they do, they look at their bottom line. They look at it as corporations. Stan Kroenke, the guy who owns Arsenal, is the same owner of the Colorado Avalanche, right? He owns the LA Rams. This is a guy that's thinking about, how do I make the most money? Which is fine. He's a businessman. But when you've got a 100-year history for a club, and I'm speaking about the one that I, you know, support, and I'm sure it's similar for you guys with Manchester United and Chelsea, that there's a, you know, it's a bit of a slippery slope, because you're dealing with history. You're dealing with something that's more than just a team, more than a jersey. And that's why you have a lot of pissed off people in Europe right now. And I don't think the temperature is going to come down for a long time.
Yeah, this isn't, this story's not going anywhere. It's going to go through legal battles and all that. And I'm sure all of the top dogs in the major North American sports leagues are thinking about it too. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Hey, solution for tanking, give the first overall pick to the league winner. I'm sure that'll go over well. It is the People's Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda coming up. Not saying, just saying. Get your submissions in for our regular segment here on the People's Show. Not saying, just saying. Coming up next on Sportsnet 650.
Now back to the People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Yeah, the People's Show. Coming up, not saying, just saying. Get your texts and submissions in for not saying, just saying today. It also happens to be the night where Patrick Marleau makes NHL history. He has played 1,767 games and will pass Gordie Howe tonight with his game for the San Jose Sharks. It's pretty wild to think about Patrick Marleau's career and even some of the stats, like how, you know, a lot of the young players in the league are like, you know, weren't even born when Patrick Marleau started playing hockey.
It is pretty unreal, because I can remember playing. I remember my conversation with, I forget his name, but one of my football coaches, assistant football coaches in high school, was Patrick Marleau's cousin. And I remember being in high school playing football and us talking about this young star, fast skating sniper who's playing in the NHL as a teenager, in Patrick Marleau. So it goes back quite a ways when you think of Patrick Marleau.
Time flies, and when he made his debut in 1997, Return of the Mac came out, guys, by Mark Morrison. Like, that's how long it's been, and he's still playing.
Yeah.
Let's do a People's Show when Patrick Marleau debuted. What were we doing?
Ooh.
I mean,
I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
I was, that's the year I went to India for the very first time, like the first time ever. Like, that's what I remember from my 11-year, like, that's what I was doing. Man, I'm looking at some of these songs. Unbreak My Heart by Tony Braxton. I'll Be Missing You, Puff Daddy. Like, woof, that's a long time ago.
Some bangers.
That is a long
there.
Time ago. Yeah. Man, Return of the Mac.
1997, Dan Riccio was like 10 years old. I don't know, like, I was playing NHL 97. You know, Mark Messier, Pavel Bure, and Alex McGillney loading up the top line with the Vancouver Canucks. John Van Beesbrook was on the cover of PlayStation 1's NHL 97. That's what I was up to. Up to no good.
Yeah, man. Well, I just think back to high school football. I know we're talking about hockey, but that's all I can think of is high school football and how one of my coaches was Patrick Marleau's cousin, and he was so proud of the kid.
What was Vic? So every what time was Patrick Vic Marleau's 1990.
I was probably just reading Calvin and Hobbes books. Was probably my thing. I still read them today. So why wouldn't I have been doing that at 11?
Hey, why not? Right, stay consistent. Titanic came out that year, guys.
Brutal.
I was a young Kate Winslet and a Leonardo DiCaprio, super young. Like, Mo Money, Mo Problems.
So wait. Like, Leo wouldn't have even met Martin Scorsese yet.
Nope.
No.
That's how long ago this was.
This one, unsigned text. I was watching Grizzlies set losing records.
Yeah, oh, yeah. That? Brutal.
Yeah.
It was also the days of you would read about games you missed in the paper the next day.
Yeah. And they wouldn't, like Ontario boy here, they wouldn't have any of the West Coast scores in the morning paper.
Of course not. That's what you fans have no idea about what was happening in Vancouver. You just, oh, yeah, that Burry guy's good, right? He scored 5 goals. Yeah, that was last week.
Sad hat, or Dan had to learn about him in a video game.
100%.
So Patrick Marleau made his debut that year that Lonnie Bohanas was playing for the Canucks.
Oh, man.
Ooh, Lonnie Bohanas.
Lonnie Bohanas. That's how long it's been, folks.
The Lonnie Bohanas reference cashes that plus 4,000.
Lonnie Bohanas. Anytime I think of Lonnie Bohanas, all I can think about are like Hawaii shirts. I don't know why, but anytime I hear his name,
Tommy Bahamas, right?
Yeah, exactly. All I think about is Hawaiian shirts.
I think of Full House episodes when they were singing with the Beach Boys.
A lot of texts coming in. Dunbar Lumber 650. Crypto Cow. Sat's getting old. Not that old, but yes, I'm closer to 40 now.
Here's a fact. We're all getting older. All of us.
Yeah.
Man, just looking at some of the movies, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, was debuted in 1997. Men in Black. Wow. Men in Black.
Men in Black.
1997.
These are all like, you know when you're like, you know, young teenager or maybe just right before becoming a teenager? Like, these are all key moments where, wow, Will Smith was so cool back then. And then that interview happened like a couple of months ago. And now, like, you know, before our heroes got like completely humbled, those are innocent times, man.
Unsigned text. Lonnie Bohanas, the greatest number 17 in Canucks history.
Ooh.
Oof, that's even better than Ryan Kessler.
Ryan Kessler's coming up at 6 o'clock. I think he's got a pretty good case against Lonnie Bohanas.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a joke.
Oh, Lonnie Bohanas is all, like, we got to ask Don Taylor, though, when he comes up. Is Lonnie Bohanas on the all-time name team for the Canucks? I think he's got to be on there.
It's got to be. I bought my first VCR in 1997. That's Luke from the Island. Do you think Luke is still using like a mini disc player right now? Like if
mini disc Walkman,
he's on a Walkman in 2021.
Dude, back in '97, I was still making mixtapes off songs off radio.
Oh yeah,
remember that? You record like, you know, you wait till nighttime, whatever they do in the countdown. You record the songs and then you try to stop it before like the ID would play, and then you put the tape together at like parties or whatever back elementary school or high school, and then you play the tape and every once in a while I'd be like, "You're listening to," and then it cuts off and goes into the next song.
I used to do that with Rap City on Much Music when you just kind of like roll on it, right?
Yeah,
and play later on.
Mike Tyson,
South Park.
Yeah,
sorry, I was gonna say South Park. Premiered the same year as Patrick Marleau. So there you go. It's been going on for just as long as Patrick Marleau.
Wow. Patrick Marleau's old. That's what I just learned. Mike Tyson biting Holyfield's ear 20 years ago. Or sorry, 1997 as well. This text comes in. Jason in Parksville. The Beezer cover in 1997. First NHL game I bought. Many laughs pausing John Davidson during the intermissions to get his frozen face. I just remember this one thing. He like it'd come on first intermission. The bodies are flying around the ice. Like, what? Why am I watching this for the 700th time? It is the People Show. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep the text coming in. It's time for Not Saying, Just Saying here on the show. Who wants to kick us off with Not Saying, Just Saying today?
All right, I'll kick it off.
Let's go.
I'm not saying the Leafs are frauds. I'm just saying they don't handle adversity well.
Ooh.
Shots fired.
Man. Look, Leaf, just seeing a little bit of the fallout on Leaf Twitter and all that from last night, because it was fun to kind of revel in it a little bit.
Hook it into my veins.
Man, to them, like, that was losing last night to the Canucks, who hadn't played for a month coming off of their COVID outbreak. It was just as bad as losing to the e-bug, David Ayers. So,
okay, we talked about it earlier on, how that hit from Alex Edler, yeah, it wasn't a good hit. But, like, Leafs Twitter thought he was Brian Marchment. Like, they were treating him like Brian Marchment last night, wasn't it?
Yeah. Who was the ultimate knee guy? Was it Marchment or was it Kasparaitis?
Yeah.
It was
Marchment.
It was Marchment. Marchment never saw a knee he didn't want to blow out.
Kasparaitis was pretty dirty, too.
He was pretty greasy. Yeah. But, like, Marchment was – that's what he was known for. Like, honestly, he wasn't really known for anything else in the league, at least with Kasparaitis.
Yeah, dragging knees and cross-checking guys behind the back into the boards face first. That was a Brian Marchment special.
Yeah.
Marchment is to the lacrosse goal that Mike Legg is, and Kasparaitis is like the Svechnikov. He might have evolved it, but it's always going to be Marchment's.
Yeah.
All right, I got one here. I'm not saying Braden Holtby is back on Seattle's expansion draft radar after last night. I'm just saying if he finishes the season strong, he should be. Hashtag Saskatchewan Hashik. Come on, man. If you're Jim Benning, you're just like, please, please continue this for the rest of the year.
Just send Ron Francis tapes of the save from last night.
Over and over. Yeah. Just gif it.
Just keep sending them emails. Hey, Ron, have you seen this video?
You know what? Who the unsung hero of this Canucks season is? Braden Holtby.
Just based off that one game?
No, okay. I'm not saying Braden Holtby is a real hero for the Canucks. I'm just saying that he's the one to put his foot down when things were getting out of hand in mm-hmm. Toronto some months ago before the Canucks mm-hmm. started riding the ship.
Lots coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Leaf Hater Steve, I'm not saying the Canucks are going to catch Edmonton. I'm just saying we're going to catch the Oilers.
Yeah, well.
Dare to
Godspeed,
dream.
Godspeed, good luck.
Yeah, dare to dream. What's BCLC paying on that? So, plus 1,600 last week, right? Zach gives props.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, plus 1,600. So maybe that changes a little bit. Maybe we're going to have to come up with we have to talk to our friends over at BCLC and PlayNow.com to see if they have some other interesting prop bets for the rest of this Canucks season. How long do they stay alive? Mm-hmm.
All right, more coming in. Tanbeer, not saying Jalen Chatfield has top four potential. I'm just saying. Oh, man, I lost it. Where did it go? He texted again and I lost it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
He's saying, not saying Jalen Chatfield has top four potential. I'm just saying he plays a nice, steady game, moves the puck well, and can skate very fast.
So Tanbeer's a fan of Jalen Chatfield.
Correct.
He like, hey, 15 minutes yesterday, looked pretty good. Jesse Nanaimo, not saying last segment made me feel old. Just saying, damn, I'm getting older. It's all of us, man.
Oh, man.
All right. I got one.
What you got?
I'm not saying William Nylander was up to no good last night. I'm just saying, how are you late for a team meeting after your game finished at 7 p.m. and you're supposed to be locked into your hotel room afterwards?
Are we suggesting William Nylander hit the mini bar too hard last night?
I'm not saying anything.
Are you saying that he may have swiped right on someone?
How do you miss the team meeting? Like, what are you doing? Like, the game
finished
at 7 p.m. local.
It's a beautiful day in Vancouver. Maybe he got distracted. Maybe he got distracted by a driver on the seawall. Maybe he saw you running and is like, oh, look at that guy. How strange is that?
Was he riding around a scooter in Stanley Park? Was he the guy?
Was William Nylander fighting coyotes last night in Stanley Park?
You sure that wasn't like this text from Mike G? Dan, any truth to the rumors that you were attacked by coyotes while running around the seawall on a scooter? I'm not saying that you downgraded from a Beamer to a scooter. I'm just saying bad things happen at the seawall when Dan Riccio's there.
It's true. It's true.
Hey, man, did you know BMW makes scooters now? So
that's your in. Jay and Ladysmith, I'm not saying that it's a good thing Edler is suspended for two games. I'm just saying the Canucks will probably take fewer penalties in those two games.
Okay, so he's looking at it as a glass half full approach, right? Not a guy that eats minutes, but less penalties. Okay. Here's another one.
Yeah.
I'm not saying no plan is a bad plan. I'm just saying a well-thought-out plan might be better. Okay, so even after yesterday's win, this texter still wants to focus on the no plan. Okay.
Another one coming in on the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm not saying Jake Paul is a loser. I'm just saying Ben Askren threw that fight.
Ooh.
Yeah, he was dropping that right hand a lot. Like, a lot. That was I don't even want to call that boxing. That was an embarrassment, man. Ooh, that was ugly.
I mean, would you step in the ring for $1 million? Like, I probably would.
Well, yeah, that was like, I mean, I would, but I wouldn't pay money to watch it.
Yeah.
That was like a carnival sideshow. That's what it was.
Did you see that? Like there was an Instagram photo that they posted. They're like in their front yard throwing money around. There's like $200 in the picture. Yeah. It's like,
you know what was more credible than those fights on the weekend? When Kimbo Slice would fight dudes in a backyard. Those are better fights than what we saw on the weekend.
Man, like, he would like pop people's eyes out in those fights. It was disgusting.
It was, but what I'm saying was, at least those were more competitive.
Well, I mean, they were just stand-up fights. There was no grappling. As soon as Kimbo Slice got into a ring with somebody that knew how to do mixed martial arts, he got gobbled up quick. Yeah, it was done. It was a wrap. You know, I made a mistake. It was JD and Coquitlam who had won, and I said it was Jay and Ladysmith about Edler. So we stand corrected. He's saying, I'm not saying you just called me Jay and Ladysmith. I'm just saying I'm not Jay and Ladysmith.
Jay and Ladysmith came in with Jake Paul. And
yes.
This one comes from Mike G. I hope I don't get fired for this. But Mike G on the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm not saying Jamie Dodd should replace C-Mac for Bick and the Boss. I'm just saying Jamie Dodd's awesome.
And we read it. We're not cowards.
We're not cowards.
Shane from Aldergrove. I'm not saying Aquilini didn't watch the game last night. I'm just saying he didn't tweet last night, so he probably didn't watch the game. He actually did tweet last night. Francesco Aquilini did tweet last night.
Yeah, he did.
Said he was very proud of the way the boys played. So he did tweet last night. Got ratioed a bit, but he did tweet.
It was a win, so why wouldn't there be a tweet?
Okay, when we say Aquilini tweets, there's obviously a ratio. Like, he's like, his tweets are like Dan Riccio's on steroids. Of course he's getting ratioed.
What's more polarizing, his tweets or Dan Riccio on the seawall?
Oh my goodness. Dan Riccio is the proper term. Dan Riccio strikes again. Okay, is there...
Silver and black can...
go ahead.
Silver and black Canuck. I'm not saying Mike G was right, but he definitely wasn't wrong.
Hey, Sad, I think this text is for you.
Oh.
1997, the year I married a woman with a Mercedes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Jeff and Langford. We're going to leave that, Jeff, but thanks for reminding me. Jeez.
That text will live in infamy.
Man, that's... I'm telling you, man, I have Ron Burgundy moments. You want to put something in front of me? Got to make sure it's right.
I'm Ron Burgundy. Leaf hater Steve, I'm not saying my wife is pissed that I forgot about our anniversary. I'm just saying I might leave town for a while.
Just don't get caught leaving town. You might get in trouble for that nowadays.
Yeah. Okay, what's worse, leaving town when you forget the anniversary or just leave town? Like, leave your wife. I think you're screwed either way, man. Just Reach, you forgot the anniversary. I did not forget the anniversary.
Yeah, you kind of did. I didn't plan ahead far enough to get a gift in time.
Sounds like you forgot it.
Plus, that's even worse. Like, see, at least if you forgot, you're kind of like, man, it could, like, I don't know what happened. I made a mistake. You didn't care enough to be prepared ahead of time is essentially what you're saying.
Moving on. Karn in Surrey, I'm not saying, but Edler's suspension only hurts us getting Luke Hughes. We need him playing and making mistakes. So wait, he likes...
That's Galaxy Brain.
Yeah, that's Galaxy Brain right there. What, Edler not being in the lineup makes the Canucks better? I'm not so sure about that. All right. That's it for I'm not saying, I'm just saying. We do it every day at 4:40, not saying, just saying. Keep your texts coming in. We'll get to the fill in the blank a little bit later on. This segment, Beating the Leafs, is blank. Coming up next, Don Taylor. Where does this regular season win rank in Canucks history. Ryan Kesler, former Canuck, will join us after 6, and we debut Password 2.0 as well after 6 o'clock. It is the People's Show here on Sportsnet 650.